Good morning. Artist Experience is an hour-long radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help you when you visit the exhibit, create in your soul, in your experience, your own work of art. The Artist Experience radio program has a unique mission. We look into the inward experiences of engagement with art, and we desire to make them explicit, both in the creator and in you, our listeners.
Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to the day. We're going to get you juiced talking about art and other things this morning. Wow, what an artistic voice with Adele and Skyfall. But we want to talk about an artistic visual voice today in the art that we're going to look at. Sheila and I were going to talk about this subject of visual voice, but then we saw this incredible, powerful exhibition at the Smithsonian American Art Museum, and we felt there was so much to talk about, even though we could have still included the topic as a whole in the visual voice. We will have to make it another program in its entirety, because that exhibition kept our heads spinning, like in the Skyfall. The local exhibition at the Smithsonian Art Museum on F Street and 8th Street is Trevor Paglen, Sights Unseen. This is an unusual photographic exhibition with sculpture and video that highlights the work of an artist in mid-career. The exhibition is basically three kinds of bodies of work which are related in certain ways. The work is basically an evolution that is ongoing about the murky and dark world of the global state surveillance. Our artist won a very prestigious MacArthur Prize in 2017. He's out there, and it's downright scary that he is. Sights Unseen, the exhibit. What is it? Is it art, science, technology? This artist seems to have picked a creative niche which opens our minds, and it sucks us into this topic of very contemporary information and imagery to the extent that the work blows your mind, and not in a good way. Trevor Paglen has developed a visual voice that is a clear statement about the world we have lived, are living in, and are probably going to be living in for a long time. Sadly, but hopefully not. This is a powerful exhibition which will stir your intellectual curiosity. What about this world our artist presents, Sheila, to us? You got to help me out here. What about this?
Well, I want to just give you my experience, okay? I stepped out of the elevator in the Smithsonian American Art Museum, and I was enveloped in two things: an eerie sound, which is like a drone of music. There was also another music coming in, which turned out to be a string quartet. And then a beautiful wall that was maybe 25 feet long and 9 feet high. And the whole wall was a detailed photograph of misty English countryside. And then if you look in the distance, there are white domes that are unidentifiable. They're alien, and yet they're beautiful. So this is the introduction to Trevor Paglen's work, an exploration of what's unseen. And it immediately sets up a paradox. If an artist's quest is to teach himself, then you, the viewer, he's teaching you to use your eyes by showing us what invisibility looks like. Paglen is a geographer, and he's an artist, and he's launched on an investigation to reveal the hidden infrastructure of worldwide systems that are meant to be secret. He begins with the question, what does the internet look like? His interest is in the surveillance of the internet. And how do they do that? And what does it look like? He's got great cameras. He takes pictures of NSA, not NASA, not NASA facilities, and secret sites surrounded by fences near which major cables come together. He dove down to where the fiber optic cables come from under the ocean to the surface. One of the places is Fire Island, where four major cables come together. There's a photograph of the surface of the beach. It's a diffused light that seems to be coming out of the air. Very much the timeless light in French and English paintings of the beach. Nothing else is evident. It's calm. And next to that large photograph is a collage of a marine map with the cable paths together with view graphs from naming the cables and giving technical information that we can't understand. So that's where we start. There are several paths that Paglen takes. A series about facial recognition and motion analysis. What is it? How they analyze it? And how the algorithms look to us if we could look inside the computer. There's another path, which is basic badges and symbols for secret surveillance programs. And then there's long telescopic videos of NSA surveillance sites around the world in often beautiful landscapes around the Earth. Then there are the drones. What do they look like in the sky? And what do they see? Then there's surveillance satellites, images of the night sky showing the tracks of surveillance satellites against the background of the stars. And then there are prototypes for space sculptures, one of which will be launched into orbit in October.
Well, one of my first questions was, is it really fine art? The more and more I was studying the exhibition, it seemed photojournalistic, something like I thought I was in a planetarium or something. But it's about data, at least some of it is. It's about information in an information age from a guy raised on the internet. But is it really art? It leaves me cold, and then that's probably what it's supposed to be doing. We all bring ourselves into this dialogue of art. The unknown often intimidates us. Trevor Paglen is taking us to the outer limits of the information age, in an age where information, imagery, data, computer models, and technology are used in spying, surveillance, intelligence gathering, and Big Brother is watching you. This is creepy stuff, but is it art? What do you think?
Well, that is really a question that is raised again and again in this exhibit, because Trevor Paglen, the way he presents some of the photographs especially, have artistic references. But I read that his friend said, you can't drag Trevor Paglen to a gallery. He's only interested in his own art.
Interesting.
Yes.
Very, very. I'm not sure that's so intelligent.
But I know. Anyway. Well, it's limiting.
Yeah,
it's to me, limiting. It's right. Limiting. So his references are obvious, to me at least, but they are also limiting if he's considering himself an artist, which he does.
Well, I think, you know, this kind of stuff, it really scares the heck out of me. Do I really need to know this when art and beauty and goodness in a kind of humanity are the few bright things that we bring to our daily lives? That's a real philosophical question about what art does. This artist comes along and artfully communicates what we that we're part of some experiment where we're being looked at by cryptic government organizations, secret campaigns, satellites, drones, hidden cameras, night vision cameras, and the technology. I mean, you know, they probably, you know, I got the sense that they know everything about me, and that's kind of creepy. But what do you think, Sheila? I mean, give it to me straight. I mean, couldn't this exhibition be in the Spy Museum or down the road at NASA? I mean, I think in the past, Trevor Paglen has actually had quite a few debates and scuffles with scientists and astronomers and stuff like that.
Well, I could answer. I mean, that question keeps coming up. The more I thought about this exhibit, that's, to me, a very central question. In John Dewey's book, which is the namesake for our show, Artist Experience, he wanted to take art down off its pedestal and said it's the refined and intensified forms of ordinary experience. And that's very important, because this is the way we present art in our Artist Experience show. So Paglen has no time for artists who don't take art's social purpose seriously. So that's one thing that he says. And he's opposed to what he sees as the cynicism of postmodernists like Jeff Koons, who, and this is a quote from him, wallow in semiosis and laugh at the idea of trying to make any grand statement. Paglen is not interested in art in the galleries. He's interested in his art. And so, as I said, he does make historical references to his art. The drone series are like Turner Skies, which they're really not. But the photographs are set up to look like color field paintings of Jules Olitsky. And if you look on our Facebook page, you can see I put down those references, and you can see how close they are.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Comparing the information sent up with satellites to orbit the Earth and imagining them to be found by later civilizations. Mysteries of our civilization, the way cave paintings are to us. So he is making that reference too, that the stuff he sends out in space is actually just like what we get from cave paintings. And he does treat his images and collages in a clear and beautiful way. People like to say, this is a quote from him, that my work is about making the invisible visible. But that's a misunderstanding, Bagland says. It's about showing what invisibility looks like. So part of my response to Bagland is my reaction to the fracking towers when Peter and I were driving through Oklahoma. The landscape was barren. There's not a farm or cattle or even a house, but what there were red, white, and blue flat fracking towers that are drills extracting gas from underground, and they were unidentified by any sign. Even the white trucks had logos, no lettering, and in this way it was quite beautiful. I say this to show that the contradiction, what we were seeing and what we didn't know, was compelling. So the questions I have to answer for myself are, where is the barrier that makes Bagland not an activist? Why isn't he outraged by what this information brings up? Like photographers taking pictures of atrocities and not helping the victims. Some of this is really helpful to our safety. This morning in the paper was the headline that two killers from Russia that poisoned the former Russian spy and his daughter were identified and caught by using surveillance cameras that are all over London, plus facial recognition software and computer algorithms that sorted the gazillions of images they started with. They even found the perfume bottle that contained the deadly poison in a dumpster. With each new innovation in art, there's always the critical question, but is it art? That's been asked so many times, it's almost embarrassing to ask it again. So this is kind of part of what we're talking about here. But it's been answered by Duchamp and Malevich and by Warhol and Lichtenstein, even by Cézanne and by the land artists like Christo and Michael Heiser. Every artist that cuts through the accepted norms has to answer that question.
And he's the 21st century answer to that.
He sees himself. Yeah, he does.
He does, yeah.
Yes. So John Dewey, again, an artist experience, says that the difference between art and other activities like journalism or activism or science, a result or product is in the world. Art uses the same processes but stops at the experience. What is the experience? The uncanny feeling, a scared wonder at the vast systems underground, underwater, and in outer space, as Trevor Bagland reveals to us. That is in our time in history.
Yeah, and we're going to have to get going on this exhibit because there's a lot to talk about. It's a huge exhibition, by the way. Trevor Bagland skillfully and craftily assembles information from things he finds through the Freedom of Information Act and other sources. The exhibition for us starts in a room gleaned from declassified information that could be released. There are about overt and covert aspects of secrecy, and our artist here is exposing them. The code names, the secret organization names of mystery, intrigue, and intrigue line the wall, and of course, they will never end. He is working with a visual language of words and data. 17 Letters from the Deep State from 2011 is one of the works, and Code Names, Classified Military and Intelligence Programs, 2001 to 2007. Well, there's these decorative tokens and patches you get when you do something great in these cryptic organizations. You know what I thought of, Sheila? It's like a kind of Boy Scout merit badges that you get when you do something in the Boy Scouts. And this is an adult version with a pathological paranoid personality attached to it. I considered like this kind of information where all these secret crypto organizations with all these juicy kind of sexy names, it's kind of like, you know, a bad boy's testosterone overload, you know, that has kind of gone totally out of control. And I think that's the scary part of this exhibition. I mean, they're real organizations.
But they're also funny.
There are some that are funny, but I mean, the names go on and on. Yeah. It's like they're animals. They're about certain cultures. They have these, like, you know, fancy ancient Greek, you know, names. And I mean, it goes on and on. And it's like, wow, so much money is going into that stuff.
And then also you ask yourselves, are these names computer generated?
Ah, It's just by chance.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting. That's another game. Well, I think it's a really sad day that a government is spending billions of dollars on these secret organizations. And there are all kinds of artists of every ilk in this country that are basically starving. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, trying to make ends meet. So this is my reaction to the exhibition. And I really thank Trevor for exposing the BS about it. And likewise, the government spends big bucks putting this exhibition together. And I think that's an ironic coup for Trevor Paglen. I'm certain that there's a big file with his name on it in these security agencies in the bowels of the government. And I heard that he actually works out of Germany. To me, that's another irony to the exhibition. Why doesn't he have the guts to come work in the United States with, you know, all the crap we have to deal with people spying us and stuff? And he's off in Germany doing his thing. So I think there's a kind of like bad taste of irony in this exhibition, mm-hmm. in its let's say curatorial concept, and not to say the guy is super intelligent, but that's something that really kind of tripped me up going through the exhibition.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because all of this is presented, I think he thinks it's neutral, it's just information, and yet it brings up, so it's like we're thinking about all these things and you don't know how it, I mean, it, as we said, it just raises so many questions. So
I mean, there's an emotionalist quality to this.
There is.
Like a coldness. I could put it almost a pathological coldness in showing the world this data and not taking a side to it. I never got a sense that he thought this was a bad thing.
No. I don't think he does, or at least he's not telling you.
Yeah, that's you it. Know? Yeah, that's more like it. Yeah.
So there's a gallery, and there are lined up photographs. They're probably 4 feet, rectangles, maybe 3 by 4 feet. And they're filled with subtle changing color. And you recognize them as photographs of skies. And the first ones are very light-colored, luminous skies, and they change in this sequence of photographs from brighter and then almost garish cloud-like formations. And if you look very closely for a long time, you can find in each photo a tiny linear drone machine, like an alien alone in a vast sky. It's tiny, but it changes everything. So here's one, the feeling that you get from looking for the predator drone, but the actual photographs don't hold your attention beyond that. My feeling about it is that the photographic printing process is limited in a way that paint is not. The dyes in printing are not subtle, not the layers of light that emanates from a Turner. Actually, they're presented like the color field paintings of Jules Zelitsky, only the color isn't nearly as fragile or luminous. It's the difference between seeing a photograph of a painting and the painting itself.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they fall short for me as art, if that's one of our questions. And then, of course, we're used to seeing images through the light of a computer screen, and our eyes might not be tuned to the difference because looking at light in a painting can require time for the eye to adjust to the light, whereas these photos are obvious. They don't hold our attention. I mean, we look at them to find the drone. I think that these drone series and their reference to and presented as art might be the weakest part of the show.
Well, you remember the Highlights magazines as a child? You got them in the dentist's office when you're waiting to get drilled. You're waiting to get drilled, you know, and you look for the little hidden thing.
Yes,
that's what I thought about these photos. You know, you had to really squint to see the drone in it. Yeah. Well, the drone series are interesting, but think about the titles. They're called Reaper and Predator drones. I mean, the word predator comes up a lot in current events these days, mm-hmm. and it reminded me of the War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, but like 21st century. I mean, the photos are beautiful and large, and they're very zoomed out landscape, and you're kind of lucky if you can see the drone in the sky. I think the reasons of these is clearly unclear, and I think that's mm-hmm. benignly apocalyptic, if that's at all possible, and it's nightmarish and spooky in the beauty. Our artist's inspiration is the sinister looming above, and that seems to never end in the show. There are many older works and lovely photos of the skies, the universe, with some satellite mechanism of information gathering in the universe. And these sea print photos have these esoteric names of the secret missions, and they are such as La Crosse, Onyx 5, Near Cepheus, Synthetic Aperture Reader, and Anaconda Satellite USA 182. Well, those are the actual names of the satellites, but you know what? Unfortunately, I was getting hooked up on these cryptic names, and the photo somehow got lost in the verbiage. You know, so what? I mean, doesn't NASA have like a lot of these same kind of photos? I mean, why is it suddenly art? Because he's exposing the fact that it's a satellite. This kind of really kind of troubled me. I think when looking at art, we have to be very careful not to razzle and dazzle the viewer with esoteric natures like long titles of a space photograph. Art is about beauty, and I think some of those get lost in that. The science gets in the way, and you know, I come from a science background, but in this case, it got in the way.
Yeah, I tend to really agree with you about that. Paglen says he isn't interested in exposing secrets, but he is interested in showing the door that closes us out. He already had an MFA from the School of Art of the Art Institute of Chicago, and he was working on his doctorate in geography at the University of California at Berkeley when he saw redacted portions of the map in the Mojave Desert, and he began photographing classified military installations, outfitting cameras with special lenses used in astrophotography. Ever since, he's been documenting the ways in which humans have transformed the surface of the Earth and how we, in turn, have been transformed by these changes. The resulting photographs are strange. He took videos of hidden sites in Nevada with telephotography instruments from 1 mile to 19 miles away, and he can get a pretty good image. It's amazing and beautiful what you see. You see slow-moving trucks, figures moving from one place to the other, but they are like partly abstract moving paintings. They're mysterious and simplified. Rather than being spooked, they have a slow, silent quality. In one beautiful video installation, Paglen presents footage recorded by a drone. The source material was intercepted from an open channel on a communication satellite, and that's now in public domain. Paglen edited the footage to focus on the moments when the drone takes a wide view of the landscape. And in doing this, he seems to give the machine a somewhat shaky human perspective and an aesthetic sensibility. It's a beautiful video.
Yeah, well, the videos in the show, to me, were probably the strongest work. I mean, this video of the string quartet and the facial recognition data and manipulation of the players mesmerized me. As the video continued, the complexity of the data is kind of shown on the screen while the players are playing, and they're beautiful musicians, and suddenly, as the video goes on, more and more data is spitting out on the screen, and suddenly the beauty of these players turns into almost mask-like demons. They become demonic, and the music is so beautiful. But when the speed of the data starts collecting on the screen, it creates a distraction, and it takes away from a hearing acuity of the event. So I soon forgot to listen to the players. I was so mesmerized by this data facial recognition stuff, and it usurped the art by subverting our attention to the facial recognition and the neon color graphics growing on the players' faces. It became more and more sinister as the musical piece went on. Well, the music died in that video, and in the graphic transference of movement information, the spectacle became something else. Human becoming robotic, corporal becoming artificial, and the warmth of the musical players, the quartet, became ice cold. And this is very well done. I mean, and it's a ghastly reality that I have to say, I don't really want to enter that realm when it comes to art, and certainly music. Well, when we get back from a short station break, we're going to bounce off this topic and discussing more of Trevor Paglen's work on the exhibition Sights and Scene. The website for the Smithsonian American Museum of Art is very good to give a synopsis of the show and discussing the work by curators and artists, the artist himself. It mentions that his mid-career survey is three bodies of work, and this was really clear and running through the exhibition. Here's a flash from the past. We're going to play for our station break a song by Elvis Costello, and it's appropriately titled Watching the Detectives. Who's watching who? But after seeing the exhibition, I am convinced that there's some mysterious cat watching me, and maybe they're also watching Tacoma Radio 94.3 FM. Well, if they're watching, I sure hope they're listening, and it'll be really worth their efforts. So let's listen up to Elvis Costello.
WOWDLP. Check us out online at TacomaRadio.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWD Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM. So I want to continue. I actually went to this exhibit twice because I'm a slow study and it's a really big show. And it was all so much information, and so much of it was unfamiliar. I read some, and I took some pictures, and the second visit was really terrific. What might have been, for me, off-putting, too much text, too many small things, made sense because of how well this show is organized. Trevor Paglen is a little bit goofy, and he's very curious, and he's very smart. When he was a kid, his family was stationed in Germany with the military, so he's at home with military installations. As we said before, he was awarded the MacArthur Genius Grant, and it's well-deserved. I believe that part of that grant, or I think, is how much influence the recipient has in the world with the work that he does. There was nothing in this show that was not aesthetic in his presentation. With everything that's going on right now in our government, it might be hard to concentrate on anything called art, but I'm grateful for this exhibit. It's fascinating, and it's completely relevant at this time in our history.
You know, thank you for mentioning that, Sheila. You know, that's probably it. And maybe, I mean, I'm seeing art right now. It's kind of a downer,
yeah,
in some ways. It's just that the nature of, I don't know, maybe being in D.C., I don't know, but, you know, that show kind of really got me in a state of mind that maybe I wasn't expecting it. Mm. Well, one of the interesting aspects of the exhibition was in the corner of these big exhibition spaces, and I found it really smart. And the artist used famous photos by another artist and juxtaposed them with his contemporary photo of the same subject, but highly zoomed in and changed in interesting ways with the advent of new technologies and data. These were two sets of these kinds of images, and one was a Shoshone Falls, Snake River, Idaho, from the top of the falls, originally a photograph by Mr. Sullivan from 1874. Well, then Trevor Paglen's photo is so different. It's very beautiful, it's mysterious, and modern. It's done with artificial intelligence and machine vision, with two different computer algorithms that are used and overlaid. What do you see in the photo versus what the two computers see or might have seen? It's very interesting. But I trust my own perceptions very much. And his title, Shoshone Falls, How to Transform Horror, which is really kind of, it's almost like he takes the original photo and it becomes something very, very mysterious. And you got to look closely. And I'm not sure what it was, but it was interesting. And the concept is a strong one, using someone else's photo. What about those 3D objects? I found them very interesting in the show.
Yeah, we did too. And beautiful. Of course. You know, there are prototypes of three-dimensional objects that could be launched into space as space sculptures. So this is a new idea. And just, we have giant earthworks. We talk about them some. This is the next step. One of them, an orbital reflector, which is a giant Mylar reflective sphere, is shown in the far room of the exhibit, and it's shown in the space where other sculptures from the museum's collection, so it underlines its place in art. There are other smaller, beautiful prototypes, including a stunning Mobius strip in steel and a double tetrahedron that's called a diamond. That's a subscale model for 100-by-5-foot reflective surface, which is scheduled to be launched, unfurled, and inflated in space this October. It really will be out there,
wow,
the first space sculpture. And it's going to be orbiting around the Earth for a few months. It will be seen from the Earth during that time. You can look it up. It's called Orbital Reflector. It's a terrific idea, the next frontier for sculpture. Trevor hired a private company to find it a slot on a commercial launch.
I mean, is that something you have to see with a telescope,
imagine? No, you could see it just as you can see satellites if you know what you're looking for.
Oh, it's probably going to hit me in the head when it comes back to Earth.
It will.
I'm waiting for that. Just my luck.
But somehow, I got to say that this idea speaks to Plagan's ego. And his professional needs as an artist, because it expands his scope from the conceptual into the actual and cements his place in the new frontier of art. So James Turrell, I can't remember if we've spoken of his work before. But
once, yeah, we did.
He works with light. His main work is called Rodden Crater, and it's built into a volcanic crater, which he bought 16 volcanic craters in the Arizona desert. But Rodden Crater is not open to the public and may never be, whereas Plagan's space sculpture, it will be able to be seen by everyone. So there are other satellites, many of them beautiful, like the Hubble, that can be seen in the same way, glinting in the skies, observable from the ground. But this particular thing has no other purpose except as an object of beauty and wonder. It's something I truly appreciate about his work, that he makes it as accessible as possible. And that is his purpose. On the other hand, his artistic ambitions, well, this is the next step.
Well, you know, those 3D objects, the thing about them, they were very simple, they were very elegant, and they were very beautiful. And the thing I think that kind of bothered me the most, they were clean. There was a clean look.
Yeah.
They were slick. Mm-hmm. And that cleanliness and slickness kind of, to me, makes them even more sinister. You know, there is a devious nature to that cleanness with those satellites and what they could be looking at if, you know, in fact, they're used for surveillance and sometime in the future. I wish they had some of them on eye level.
Yes,
and I think that
they're really
high up, and I think that probably was one of the reasons that they put them up there, because they're unapproachable, and you know that's what really spies like to do. They keep things, you know, out of reach. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want you to know identities and things like that. So they're worth close study, and they were the most palatable things, and you kind of mentioned this, but they were less visually menacing than so many of the other things, which I really needed a breath, because I was getting so like paranoid that I was being watched in that exhibition. I needed a little breath. But many of the images in the exhibition throw beauty on its head for alternative means, for reasons and theories and speculations. The simple beauty of people on a beach, you know, that Fire Island beach scene, you know, a beautiful panorama of a desert landscape, an underwater adventure, the sunset of mountains, landscapes of beauty, they become something less beautiful in his context.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's kind of a mind game there. So giving artistic license in a paranoid complex, and that's been around a long time, and like the Cold War is a great example. I mean, our artist puts it in kind of the small fraction in our existence, like now, and he puts it now, and I think he's kind of micromanaging the little security we have to become actualized in our democratic world by exposing us to the dark side. In other words, I walk around every day like most of us. You know, we want to be happy in our shoes. We want to live life in a very beautiful way. We don't want to think people are watching us, you know, this and that. And he kind of hits us with this, like this moment that you could be being looked at. And, you know, that really takes away from freedom. And I think that's the thing that bothered me the most. And, you know, I'll mention it on the radio. I mean, how many of us have had this experience? Well, people are looking at what we buy on the internet. Mm-hmm. And this guy is totally about the internet, Trevor Paglen. Like, I mean, I buy incontinence products for a very elderly aunt online. I mean, do you know that every time I open my computer, there's a photo of a pull-up diaper for women on the right side of that computer screen? Well, you know, how about that? They know that I buy incontinence products, and that's kind of scary. So my data is out there. I spend my money on, you know, incontinence products for a loved one, and now I constantly am being reminded when I have to buy more. That's invasive. And we're at the point now, and I mentioned it to my class this week. They were laughing at me that, like, you know, that's coincidentally why. But, you know, you buy a purse, you buy a mouthwash or castor oil, they're going to remind you that you need more. And in that sense, he's on to something here. And so But he puts it in a political way about who's deceiving who. And I'm not sure I really want to live this way, but I know I have to live this way because I'm a 21st century person in a 21st century world. But I think it's a skewed image of reality that he portrays. And the orb that you mentioned in the 3D sculpture mm-hmm. is perfect in that gallery. Because that it's an anamorphic perspective projection that alters our reality. So he's in some ways creating an alternative reality for us. And the premise to have that in the show is absolutely perfect because we look at things stretched and altered and the spaces and the people. And this kind of screwy illusion is what makes us really curious but yet very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, for myself, this show is completely illuminating. It's disturbing and reassuring at the same time, because of the artist's belief in art. And that's something that he keeps hammering with us. And if you believe in art, you're believing in something.
Oh, for sure.
Beyond yourself. And because the surveillance is being revealed to us, it can also be reassuring in that we know what it is, because most of us really don't know what this is. I recommend this show for someone like me who is more comfortable looking at art than looking at technology. This opened the door. Being tied to the current news in an obsessive way, I can see what information dumps are and the technology that's used to sort through huge piles of data, which I had no idea how they did this.
It's interesting you say that because, you know, you go on the internet to find the news, the breaking news, as they put it on the internet, and when you go through that, it's all about, you know, someone's data, and it goes on and on. It's almost vomitous kind of in its thing. So at the end of the exhibit, I found these really odd. There was a group of works called Adversarially Evolved Hallucinations, and that word actually doesn't exist in the dictionary. I checked. Adversarially. It wasn't there. So he made up a word, which is good. That's about art. Anyway, but these works, the artist calls them impossible objects, and they are very strange images. It's a mix of the use of artificial intelligence and a set of visual taxonomies from a host of literary and scientific sources. The artificial intelligence digests data and constructs these omens or portents. It seems like imagery is enlarged and evolved to produce very frightening images, mm-hmm. such as vampire, corpus monster of capitalism. There's the kind of political economic twist there, of adversarially evolved hallucinations of 2017. This image is the most powerful of these use of a dye sublimation print, which is also known as a dye diffusion print. I actually didn't know what that was. And this computer printer uses heat to transfer dye to a variety of materials, such as plastic, card, paper, and fabrics. It's used commercially and in the artsy photographic print way. Well, technology has usurped the information here. Vampires are as old as the Transylvania Mountains, but our artist uses it with cold data in an analytical way, and it puts a spin on Dracula.
Well, face it, this is the new era in our history. In this exhibit, we look at the vast systems of intelligence in the sky and in huge buildings filled with computer servers where computers are talking to each other. And humans tend the server farms and design groovy code names and badges, proud of their place in the secret. We look and we feel a sense of awe and we feel a sense of dread. And this has all come about in our, you and me, Tom, in our adult lifetime.
Yeah,
and
this is it.
We're in it now. It's not going away.
Right, we're in it now. Right. I mean, the exhibition at the Smithsonian American Art Museum on 8th and F Streets in Northwest, in the district, of course, is a really good example of an artist, Trevor Paglen, has evolved a strange niche where art and information is used against us. These works are very thought-provoking, and I think you've got that from our show today. He's very intelligent, he's crafty, and somewhat, I find, demonic. And there is a thread of consistency here about the contemporary martyrdom that artfully exposes the fact that being spied on, surveilled, and watched is kind of creepy and bad news, okay? So are our freedoms being subjugated? And does this question our democracy? He kind of hints at this, but I'm not sure. But you'll need to see the exhibition to find out yourself, and it's a large exhibition that runs through early 2019. The exhibition, Trevor Paglen, Sights and Scene, through January 6th. It's free, and it's on the catty corner to the Verizon Center and at the Gallery Place Metro. Sheila, tell our listeners about an upcoming show.
Well, Tom and I want to be putting on a series of shows about the development of an artist. We've touched on it in this show a little bit, and how a visual artist views their success from the beginnings of their art career to the mid-career artist until their late and hopefully productive life in advancing age. This is a very big topic, and we hope to tackle it soon with a series of three shows on how the visual artist sees success.
Well, that series of shows will be full of confessions and sticky subjects about what success is. Experience art and the visual in everything you do. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not a plane. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world serves its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Feed it up and not speak. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting. Every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, step down. Watch your heel crush, crush, uh-oh. This means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.